Thanks.
I'm so glad that this has been in the works for a little while, trying to get you guys in on the show. And I think it's an extremely important conversation. And like I was saying to you off mic just before we got started, that it was John, you know, that is the one that first made me aware of Threads of Life and the organization and what they do. And also it was John and the other MOL inspectors that were on the show when we did a roundtable show around the 400s or something like that, that they educated me to the idea of when a worker is hurt or loses their life, nobody really factors in everybody around that worker. It's almost like you guys are invisible, which is not really the truth. It's far from it. And so that's why I wanted to do this show. And when I first spoke to Susan, and she's been amazing about this organizing everything, that I was like, yeah, I want to do this. I really want to have this conversation. Because I think it's important. I think I want to continue shedding some more light and getting people to really understand that when a worker does get hurt, there is a significant other, there is a, you know, child, siblings, there's you know, aunts and uncles, there's family, there's friends, and there's other workers as well. They're all affected by this one person that had a situation unfold, right? So I just want to welcome you guys and just get the ball rolling from that point, right? So it's Melanie, and how do you pronounce the last name?
Kowalski Fleming.
Polish.
Yes.
Polish guy told me anything with ski is Polish, right?
Pretty much.
And then it's Joanna LaRue, right?
Yep.
Okay. And you guys you're coming from Barrie, and you're coming from?
St. Thomas.
St. Thomas. Okay. And everything was fine? Driving in, getting here, there's no problem at all?
Yeah.
Okay. And then I want to thank Susan from Threads of Life. I want to let everybody know that you can find Threads of Life at www.threadsoflife.ca. Also, you can reach out to her under SHALDANE at threadsoflife.ca. And their phone number is 705-707-9715. And as you guys were saying, Threads of Life is across the country in all the provinces and territories. And they've been around for just over 2 decades now?
Yep. Yeah, just over 20 years.
Do you know who was the one that started it?
Shirley Hickman is our founder. And she lost her son to a workplace fatality. And she got together with a bunch of other family members who had lost mostly children at that point. They They created something called the Life Quilt, Canadian Life Quilt, which is a memorial to the thousands of young workers who have been impacted by a life-altering injury or a fatality. And from there, those families, Shirley just decided she needed to do something for the families who were left behind in the aftermath of these incidents, and Threads of Life was born.
You guys weren't in construction.
My son was in construction.
No, you weren't?
No.
So, but you guys saw, I'd love for you guys to introduce the person that we're going to talk about. Melanie, you want to begin?
So I'm here to represent my husband, Mark. He wasn't specifically in construction, but he actually did take construction management as his college diploma, but he worked as an industrial electrician. In the industry for almost 17 years, tons of experience, always had been a safe worker. And on April 2nd, 2011, he went to work on a regular overtime shift. And while working at Heights on a ladder, he experienced a unwitnessed fall, which caused significant injury to himself. And
from a height of?
I believe it was about 8 feet. So any fall is... can have devastating impacts. So for him, it led to many years, about 4 years of struggling with a brain injury and significant pain to his shoulders. And ultimately, they called it a failure to thrive. And he passed away 4 years after his incident on August 11th, 2015.
And he was how old at the time?
And he was 39 at the time of his incident, and he was 43 when he passed away. And it's been a journey. So, and for me, my journey to Threads of Life was I had been reading a newspaper article, because I think once, and any family member who's experienced this form of impact to their family, if it's on the news, if it's on in an article or somewhere, you hear it. It's so much louder to you, and you immediately empathize with the family members that are going through it. And I saw someone in the comment section saying, I hope this family reaches out to Threads of Life. And I was like, oh my God, that's where I need to be, because you struggle so much.
It's hard to speak to someone who doesn't understand what's going on?
Yes and no. I mean, I think if you've experienced grief, there's levels of empathy that you can carry, but it's so much different than, say, a family experiencing some other type of tragedy.
And then I'd love for you to introduce Mark. Or sorry, not Mark.
Michael.
Michael.
Mm-hmm. So Michael was a roofer. He'd actually started out as a framer, so he was a framer for about 2 years before he moved up
a little higher
to the roofing industry. He was working alone on one side of the house on a new build. It was close to three stories on the side of the building he was working on. He had been having trouble with his nail gun all morning. So this is all stuff that came out during the investigation and the coroner's inquest. He'd been having trouble with his nail gun all morning, been running up and down testing it. And he had gone down from the roof just before his fall to fix his nail gun again. Ran up to the top of the ladder to test the nail gun. He wasn't wearing his safety harness and obviously not attached to, they called it the tagline.
Lifeline.
And slipped at the top of the ladder. Same idea. Basically landed on his head. There was no injury to any other part of his body that they could tell. He was in a coma for 6 days, and he died on January 25th, 2006, of multiple organ failure that was a direct result of the brain trauma.
And he was how old?
22.
This is going to be a difficult show, because I know you guys have spoken about this and relived it, and it's just, I can't even understand that loss, right? I have no idea of that loss. When you guys get that call or that first line of communication, what is happening to you guys? You're being told something that you never thought you would ever hear.
I remember everything that day. I think when you get a trauma in your life, it imprints on your brain. And I can remember how the house smelled. I remember what I was wearing. I remember what I was doing. I remember what I did the night before. And it stops. I don't know if you've ever seen those music videos where the singer is on the street and everyone around them is moving a little bit faster than them. And it's exactly what you feel like. And I think I sat in that place for months and I just didn't know how to relate to the world around me, because I was just surviving to the next piece of information and the next thing to understand and the next way to get help or to recover for me. I don't know how it was for you.
Yeah, that resonates very much. I was at work, actually, when I got the call from the police, and I was just coming back from my lunch break. So, again, details. I can remember everything. I can remember what I was wearing. I wore it for 3 days straight at the hospital. But I walked in the doors to work, and the receptionist said, "The police are trying to get a hold of you." And I'm thinking, for what? And so I barely got back to my desk, and my phone rang again. I picked it up, and it was the South Simcoe Police telling me. And if I ever use the word accident, it's not my word. I'm paraphrasing someone else, because I don't believe in accidents. I believe there's preventable workplace injuries and fatalities, not accidents.
I 100% agree.
So he said, Michael's been in an accident. He's being airlifted to Sunnybrook Hospital in Toronto. He's unconscious. That's all I can tell you. And asked if I could get someone to drive me to down to the hospital because the police had to remain on the scene until the MOL investigation was complete. So they couldn't come and speak to me in person or take me down there. So my supervisor drove me down. I arrived at Sunnybrook and he was still being taken care of in the emergency room. And I was told that he was in a coma, that he'd sustained severe head injuries. There was significant trauma to his brain. And the one thing I remember when I got off the phone, the people around me, and I was just like, I have to get to the bathroom. I think I'm going to throw up. I didn't, but it was surreal. It's like you said, it feels like everything around you is kind of going at a different speed and you're walking through water or something. It's just,
I'm curious, after the passing of both men, how long did it take for people around you, whether it's family or friends or coworkers, to ask you guys, how are you doing? Because I've seen it before and I've experienced it before. Everyone forgets the other one, you know what I mean? And the direct the other one, whether it's a significant other or if it's the mom or dad, they seem to forget what they're going through. And I'm curious on how long it took for someone to notice that, you know, what's going on with you now that this has happened?
I don't know if I remember like a specific instance, but for me it was because it was such a long time dealing with. So for me it was the work nurse that phoned me, and I can remember asking her because I don't think she's ever had to make a phone call like this. She didn't know how to. She's like, so he's been injured, and I go calm. I'm like, okay. And then she's like, so there was a bit of blood. And I'm like, okay. And she was just not telling me the information fast enough. I was like, spit it out. So I was like, listen, do I have 5 minutes to get dressed or do I just get in my car and go? Like, you need to just tell me how I'm reacting to this. And at that time she said, you have 5 minutes. And I can just remember thinking like, everything is going to change in these next 5 minutes. Like, it just narrowed down to something so simple. And I phoned my family right away I'm just one of those people in a crisis. It's like, I have to feel in control because it's the only way everything can feel okay in that moment. And for me, it lasted 4 years because with his significant brain injury, Mark's, he developed post-traumatic epilepsy. So I have a bit of dark humor. We used to joke that we should have a frequent flyer card to the hospital and just like get it stamped and scan in, because it was constant falls, constant stitches, constant trying to figure out medication. Like, the visits never ended. And for me, like, I couldn't hear an ambulance siren. I couldn't hear a siren. I couldn't pass an accident. I couldn't. Because it was so triggering. Because I went into this spiral of like, I know what that family's going through. I know what they're about to experience. I know what that phone call feels like. Like, you just get into these patterns and you have to, after his passing, you have to relearn how to be the person who isn't in a constant state of crisis and trauma. Like, I didn't know how not to exist in that place. So it's taken a while to kind of figure out who I am now, because I'm not running to the next doctor's appointment or getting home from work and cleaning up blood or trying to take him to doctor's appointments. So it was just, and I was lucky enough to have my in-laws and my immediate family are amazing. Like, they were very good at holding space for me to grieve or to ask questions or to any of those things that you might need during those times. They just stepped up and did. And so I have a lot of gratitude for that. And I think that's also why I am a part of an organization like Threads of Life, because that's what it does for other families who maybe don't have those same resources that I did, is they hold that space to grieve and to exist and be seen and just hold you up. That's how I feel anyway.
And you guys first discovered Threads of Life, how far back now are we talking?
For me, it was just over a year after Michael died.
Okay.
We slipped through the cracks when the ministry was just starting to...
Around that time is when they started to be better.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word.
Yeah. And so there was two crisis counselors on board at the MOL at the time. Pardon me. And one was all on board that Threads of Life was an amazing idea, that there was nothing better than other people in the same situation to support people who were going to be going through that. And the other was very much of the mindset that these people at Threads of Life aren't professional counselors. They're not trained therapists. They shouldn't. They have no place in.
Who was saying this?
This was the mindset of one of the two crisis counselors. Very nice lady. So she, not that she was a bad crisis counselor. From what I remember, but she did not share Threads of Life information. Because she was of the mindset that we needed professional.
I was going to ask you guys about that because it's like my dad passed away at 57, you know, going on almost 25 years now. And I was there the whole night, right? And so when that counselor came to me, they started speaking to me like that. And so I was in my mid to late 20s. And I just looked at the person, and it's not that she was a mean person or she wasn't doing anything correctly. I just said to her, stop speaking to me about the medical proper language on what just transpired and just tell me what happened to my dad. Mm-hmm. As a human being, right? That's how I wanted her to be that way, right? So I'm sure that you guys probably wanted that same thing too.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just, one human being speaking to another human being, not worrying about if there's lawyers behind that counselor person, you know what I mean? Worrying about if we say the wrong thing in a certain tone or something like that, that we can use it against them. And I'm like, how about if we just show a little bit of sympathy for what's been lost here, right?
Yeah.
And you guys experienced that when that first, but that's kind of, you mentioned something earlier that kind of got my attention where he lost the medical, they said he lost the will to thrive.
It was called a failure to thrive.
Failure to thrive.
So with his type of injury over the 4 years, and I don't know all of the proper medical terms, but he developed brain atrophy. So everyone ages naturally and your brain atrophies slowly in life. But his was hyper-developed. I don't know if it was from the injury. I don't know where, like, if it was from the continuous seizures. I don't exactly know where it came from. But he could not really make life-sustaining decisions when it came to. And so he slowly faded from who he was. And especially with a brain injury, there's a very short window of healing. So from what I was told from his counselors that it's about a 2-year window. So you do the most significant part of your healing in the first 2 years after a brain injury. And
does that change the older one gets?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I just know in my experience with him, like I call it in my speech when I go out and talk to groups, like I just watched my best friend pass away slowly. Because every time he would have a seizure, he would wake up, bless him. And every time, it was just this constant, like, the loss of will to live. Because he was such, like, and the construction people can understand this. He was like a man's man. Like, he wore the flannel. He even had house boots. Like, he has, and I've brought them today. Like, he wore his steel-toe boots all of the time. All of the time. So he would have the ones he wore to work, and he would have the ones he put on when he got home. And he called them his house boots. He even wore a pair when we got married, and I didn't care. I was like, I'm not going to take away from who you are.
With the tux?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a tux. It was a suit. He's like, I'm not wearing a tux. I'm like, no. I'm like, I don't care.
He's a man's man.
Like, literally, most of his wardrobe was from, like, free Budweiser cases of beer. Like, I'm not even kidding you. Like, that's who he was. Gray t-shirts, the button-up fly Levi jeans, his steel-toe boots. Got his Budweiser hat on, and he's outside in the yard doing, like, I don't know, the gardening, like took care of the yard work, always building things, like that's who he was. And he could do none of those things. Like he couldn't even wear his boots because they were almost too heavy to walk in. So it was like everything that made him who he was, he lost that. Couldn't drive, couldn't go out in his shop and build anything he used to build. And he was like, that was so much a part of who he was.
I don't want to seem like I'm overstepping or something like that. And you guys don't have to answer this question. Because you went through 4 years and you went through
6 days.
6 days. Do you wish they would have passed when it happened? And honestly, tell me if I'm overstepping and I'm like, I shouldn't be asking this question. But because of that pain that they're going through and you're going through.
For me, that's a yes and no answer. That really has two answers. Michael went through multiple surgeries. They had to put a gauge in his skull to monitor his brain because it was swelling really rapidly. Then they had to do a craniectomy to remove a portion of his skull because his brain was swelling so rapidly that it was very close to putting fatal pressure on his brainstem. So he, you know, that whole time we're trying to save him, but at the same time, we're just hurting him more and more. So that's the yes piece. Yes, it would have been better for me, for him, to not have put him through all that. For me, though, it gave me a little bit of time to say goodbye. You know, even though I wasn't ready, and it just near the end, because at the beginning, you know, they were hopeful for what they called a reasonable recovery, never a good or positive, reasonable was the best they ever gave us.
Because they would still need assistance for the rest of their days.
Yeah. But in the beginning, you know, there was some hope, but near the end, they were getting closer and closer and telling us, you know, really there is the multiple organ failure included his kidneys, his lungs, and his heart. So as his heart was losing the ability to pump blood to his brain, he was developing more and more serious brain damage as well as the trauma. So his potential for even reasonable recovery was deteriorating significantly day by day the last few days. And so as much as at the time nobody wants to admit, we're going to have to make a decision. We did actually have to make a decision, and that was another thing I would have said no, I would never have wanted to make that decision again, that it was time to turn off life support. But it did give me that couple of days to talk to him and to, you know, do all the mom things, tell him how much I loved him. And
it was more difficult for you, though, Melinda, with 4 years.
I'm very much the same. Yeah. Like, there's, because we were fortunate in that first 2 years where it seemed like we were like, okay, this is going to be our new normal. This is doable. We can manage this. Life isn't going to look like what we planned. And Mark and I hadn't been married very long. We got married September 10th. Or to September 4th, 2010, and he had his accident 7 months later. So we never got to go on a honeymoon. We didn't, any of those things. But we were older in getting married. Like, I was 36, and we were like, we just want to start a family. And I was like, well, you got to put a ring on it, dude. And
nothing wrong with that.
And so we got married with the intention of having children. So in that first 2 years after his incident, we managed to have our son. And so he was 2.5 when when Mark passed away. So, and I am so grateful because he's the best thing we ever did. And it was the one dream I could fulfill of Mark's. Oh my God, get emotional, kids. Bring kids into it. It's
fine,
hard.
It's fine.
But so, like, I am so
and
grateful.
Your son's name?
My son's name is Liam. And he is so much like his dad. It's crazy. But I'm so grateful because I think that also held our families together, because I think tragedies can really put a lot of strain on relationships, especially, I mean, my in-laws are amazing. I mean, I was only in the family for a very short window of time, and I mean, I can't imagine my life without them. So I'm grateful that I have my son. I'm grateful that Mark has his son and that I get to raise him. But at the end of Mark's life, when I knew it was getting to a place where the outcome wasn't going to be well, I did have conversations with his family and with mine, and we were at peace when he passed away. It was time, and we're grateful that he is in a place where he's not suffering anymore, because it was just, there wasn't any more joy for him. And it's hard to watch someone exist that way. So I'm grateful he's at peace, but it's just this double-edged sword where it's like, I wouldn't want him to exist how he was, because it was, when you have someone who's such a strong male personality who loves to be outdoors and active and all of those things, and they can barely get out of bed most days, like, you don't want that life for them. And he wouldn't have wanted to live that life. So
we know that specifically tradesmen are very stubborn, very hard-headed.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see more tradeswomen in there, because I want their common sense kind of, you know, subtleties to rub off the tradesmen. So then and I think that the tradesmen are getting better, but I'm going to say the majority of tradesmen go to jobs and they go to work not thinking about this. This is not a part of the equation. This is never going to happen to me. And it just takes that split second. Both of your situations were split seconds that something changed. And I want more, especially the younger trades, to really understand the risks that are associated with everything. And there's lots of stigmas attached to construction where you get people afraid to speak up. They're being told to do a task, even though deep down they know there's risk associated with that task. And we want them to speak up without the fear of being terminated and, you know, let go and not have work at that point, especially during hard economic times, right? But I really want, out of this show, why I started this show and why I want to do this show and why I'm doing more shows about safety. And listen, I was never the perfect trade. I was that stubborn tradesman. I was just like, no, it's not going to happen to me, and I'll get electrical tape, and that's my Band-Aid. We just live by the electrical Band-Aid, right? And but, you know, once you start realizing there is a risk that you won't go home, and then you start realizing what and who and how that's going to affect everybody, maybe you take that extra little split second before something happens, and you just make sure things are safer. Maybe there's a railing there. Maybe there's that. Like, you just question it. And I think that we want more and more tradesmen and women to see other people's job sites and speak up and say, that's wrong. You know what I mean? And just, are you guys conscious of that now? Because I'm sure you still drive around, as much as a job site is going to trigger you. And I'm not saying you're going to be playing that mom, that situation where it's like, do as I'm telling you to do, be safer, right? Mm-hmm. But do you still see the lack of safety on these job sites?
Oh, I do. I guess a couple of I have stopped.
Good.
On the side of the road.
We should all stop.
Beside a house where there's a roofing company doing a roof with three guys not tied off, and gone up to and asked who the their supervisor was.
You can swear on this show.
Well, because I'm representing Threads of Life.
Oh, okay, all right.
I'll
all
try right. to abstain. I was raised by truckers, so I do have a trucker's mouth, but I'll try on behalf of Threads of Life to abstain. But I have stopped and asked who the supervisor was and asked if they were thinking. I have also stopped at the side of a building where I was watching a roofer tied off doing all the right things, and stopped and told him, congratulations, thank Amazing. You very much yeah. For being safe. We actually just had our roof done on our house on Monday, and I made sure that I left before they got there, and that I didn't come home until after they were done, because it can be a trigger. Not yeah. It's been almost 19 years, so it's not as much of a trigger, but it can be. And especially if I see workers that aren't using appropriate PPE. I see it, I notice it, and I've occasionally said something.
Which you should. We should all.
Everybody should.
Yeah, because we should all be watching out for our brothers and sisters. As simple as that. We know that construction sites are dangerous. We don't have to have Eagle. Like, we don't need that on the site where it's like, I'm too cool for PPE. Nobody is too cool, right? I think they are learning a little bit more, but you're still getting the young ones that are, I'm still okay. I'll pull it off. I can still pull it off and get something done, right? But do you stop? Do you speak to anybody? Or
So even before I met Threads of Life and started as a speaker, I was speaking. I found ways because I'm part of a professional union. I work in the auto industry. I was like, I'm determined to share my story because this has to stop happening. Like, because I've worked in industry for almost 30 years. Like, I've been around environments that can't always be as like magically safe. Like but you have to be aware of your situation. And I do stop. I stop at work. I've looked at my team leaders and my supervisors and went, you know who I am, right? Like, you see what they're doing over there. Maybe you need to go over there. Like, and I've walked up to people and said, you need to put a safety vest. You're in a crush zone, and I don't want to see something happen to you. But I think that's the beauty of why we share our stories, why we do the speaking that we do. Because, like, our voices are so powerful. Because when I talk about Mark to anyone, and I've shared from, like, old age home people to students to any other industry and wide range of workplaces. I mean, I've shared to the heads of companies. Everyone knows a Mark in their family. He is someone's brother. He is someone's son, cousin, uncle, friend. And once you connect with them emotionally, once they really can feel it, you take that away. You carry that. When they see some of the images that I share of Mark's life before and his life after, nobody leaves without a piece of Mark. And that small piece could change the life of somebody. So it's why we do what we do. I mean, I was never a public speaker. I was like, there's no way I'm getting in front of 200 people and saying anything. But now I'm like, if I don't.
I'll speak to anybody.
Anywhere.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I would love for you guys to share a lot, because I know a little bit about Threads of Life, and there's the walks, and there's other things that they do as well to help out people. If you guys want to share all those little details that they do, anybody wants to reach out to them, they can speak to them and be a part of volunteer, things like that.
Sure. So Threads of Life is a national charitable organization from coast to coast that provides provides support to families who are coping with the aftermath of a workplace tragedy, whether that is a life-altering injury, an occupational disease, or a fatality. We also have what's called the Speakers Bureau. We have a number of trained speakers who go out, and we will speak to anybody from students to, like Melanie said, corporate heads and everybody in between about sharing our story to make that personal connection between the things you do and the way you behave and the way you think about safety and the real repercussions of the lack of safety awareness. So that's our Speakers Bureau. And like I said, we will speak to any group, any big or small. And then we have our Steps for Life walk, which happens just before NAOSH week every year at the beginning of May in communities across Canada. I think we're in 30 communities right
now.
Something
like that, yeah.
It's a 5 kilometer walk, right?
It's a 5 kilometer walk, stroll, run. A couple of years ago, the Barrie walk had a group of firefighters who came out in full gear and ran it. Mm. And we're all like,
yeah, no.
I mean, first of all, firefighters showing up.
But great.
Are they back this year?
Probably not. Yeah.
But yeah, so that is that's Threads of Life's primary fundraiser, but it is also one of the big goals is to raise awareness in communities about the importance and the impact.
I wanted to share, because I shared on social media today, because I was just interested in doing a little bit of work, and I had a conversation recently about if it's getting better, the awareness and lack of incidences, specifically deaths. And it's hard to get the data and kind of connect it, because the government will say we're getting better, but they're not also telling you that there's fewer workers on the sites because of economical times, right? So it's not really a fair reflection. But some of the data that I came across in Canada, this is Canada, in the past 20 years, we're on average about 140 to 170 workers die each year, which is 140 to 170 too many people die in this every year, right? And we've just seen a steady incline of this happening. There's a little bit of a jog during the pandemic years where it's changing a little bit, but we're like, the worker size is getting to 1.4 as of last year, 1.4 million as of last year, and 20 years before, around 2003, we were at about a million, just over a million. But then the deaths back then were half than what they are going right now. And so what I wanted to let everybody know is that the number one are falls from heights. That's the number one, contributed to 35%. Second one is struck by an object or a piece of equipment. And then third is electrocution. Fourth is caught in, crushed by. Five is vehicle accidents. Number six is exposure to hazardous materials. Seven is fires or explosion. And eight is other causes, which is heat exhaustion and drowning. And I'm just trying to figure out, like, how do we... The awareness part is far more valuable than as long as that worker is understanding that they... Something can happen to them, but sometimes even worse is someone... As a result of not being aware of safety, you could hurt somebody else, which is really devastating as well, right? And we should all be very conscious of both of those and be aware that when we do go to the job site, that we get to go home from the job site, not in a ride in an ambulance, right?
One of the things I talk to, especially the young workers or... the high school students, because I speak to a lot of high school students going out to do their co-ops. And I always talk about the other two young workers who were on the job site that day. So all three of the workers on that site were young workers. They were all under, Michael was the oldest at 22.
Oh, wow.
And then there was the supervisor who, I don't know how old the supervisor was. And I always talk to them about, to the students, about their own safety and the importance of their own safety and their rights and responsibilities as young workers and all of that, but also their responsibility to say something when something doesn't appear safe, to say something when they don't, whether they don't think it's safe for them or for somebody else they're working with. Because we were, there was a coroner's inquest, as there is for all construction fatalities, and those other two young workers were there, and they both bawled through the entire thing, talking, you know, what they saw, what they tried to do for Michael, you know, the one...
they saw him actually fall.
Nobody saw him fall, because he was alone on his side of the roof.
Oh, so they saw him.
Nobody, they heard. But they, the one of, that was the first one to reach him, you know, he talked about When he got there, there was blood coming out of Michael's ears and his nose and his mouth, and that Michael wasn't breathing, and yelling at him, "Breathe, Mike, breathe." And then he, when the other young worker got to him, got to them, he threw his coat on Michael and he ran door to door. There was no self-service where they were working that day. 20 years ago, self-service wasn't as good as it is now. Yeah. He literally ran door to door. It was a new construction or new subdivision, so there weren't people in every house trying to find someone home so they could use a phone to call 911. Supervisor jumped in the truck to run to the local police station. And you know, the other young worker that stayed with Michael, he was sobbing, and he said, all I could do was sit there and watch him bleed. That stayed with those guys.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure it still does. So that's one of the things that I talk about to these students is, you know, even to see it
is going to affect you. Yeah,
it is. So it's not okay to say it's not going to affect me. If you see something that could hurt someone else, you have to say something.
I have a lot of respect for the Ministry of Labor inspectors who do get those calls to go there and what they experience, because they experience quite a bit and what they go through. But the co-workers, are they still in construction, the other two?
I'm not sure. Okay. They were both still roofing at the time of the coroner's inquest. So my guess is they might be. Construction tends to be one of those industries where the money is too good to leave, right?
Well, it's almost you have this, I have this skill, I have this passion, this is my interest, this is my calling, this is what I'm going to do. We understand that there's a slight chance that this could happen, but we never think that it could happen to you. We all talk about it, and it's like the unheard conversation on the sites is what I mean. And it becomes a very loud conversation after it happens. And that's the unfortunate part, because it should be loud on the site. And we're trying to do that same thing. I'm trying to figure, like, can you guys share, how is the Ministry of Labor during this whole, because obviously there was an investigation, right? And it would have carried on for the entire time, or was it just when the incident happened?
So for Michael, the investigation goes, that it's changed. We just learned a couple of weeks ago. When Michael died, they had 1 year to complete their investigation and determine whether they were going to press charges or not. It's now 2 years. So there was a 1 year period where we really had no information about what had actually happened on the job site, because they don't want to, jeopardize, if it does go to trial, they don't want to jeopardize, the court case. Okay. So everything is kept under pretty tight wraps until they determine whether they're going to charge the company or not. So the Ministry of Labor, they're called a manager, project manager, I think was what they were called. He was very nice, really awesome. He did, you know, called periodically to just check in and say, just want you to know things are still ongoing. But he couldn't tell me anything until, and they literally called us the day after their time frame was up and said, you know, he said, when's the earliest you can come in and meet with us? We'll tell you what's going on. We'll explain everything. And they did charge the company. So, but during that 1 year period, that's a really tough time for families who have gone through a fatality.
Yeah.
because they don't tell you anything. You have no idea other than little tidbits that you might have received at the very beginning from, you know, maybe the police who called. Yes, I knew that Michael had fallen from the top of a ladder. The why, when, where, how wasn't, we didn't find that out until the investigation was complete. I don't know how it goes with an ongoing situation.
I still don't have those answers.
There's no resolution yet.
Well, there is probably a resolution, but I met with the Ministry of Labor once, and they came to my house to talk with Mark and me. They wanted, because I had his bloody cut-up uniform and his boots that he had wore that day in a bag in my basement, because you get sent home with those things, and they wanted pictures of it. And then I was never contacted again. So it's been all of this time. So 9 years, I think, 10 years since he passed away. And I have considered reaching out for those answers, but I lived in crisis for so long. Like, I went through even some personal issues with myself. Like, I almost passed away having my kiddo. So, like, it was just so much going on and so many crises that I didn't ever, like, I didn't have the energy to find out answers. I just wanted my husband to survive.
Yeah.
And looking back now, it doesn't serve me currently to have those answers, because there isn't anything that's going to make this better. It isn't. And I maybe will pursue that someday, because those are things my son may want to know. And at that time, I'll let him make that decision, and I will, whatever he decides, I will support 10,000%. But, like, I'm sure it doesn't matter what is written on those pages. There isn't going to be that aha moment of, I get it. Like, there is, nobody wins. Nobody wins in this. Everyone loses. The coworkers lose. The families lose. The companies lose. There isn't anything good. And so I just never pursued it. So I didn't. So for me, I don't know what the process was, because, I mean, really, at that time, Mark was just an injured worker. Like, he just had catastrophic injuries, and it was all about getting him what he needed medically to function in his life. So beyond that, I don't have any answers, and I may never.
In your situation, so they were charged, but were they convicted?
They were. They actually were charged, and I cannot remember what the three charges were. They agreed to plead guilty to one in order to have the other two dropped. So the lesser two charges were dropped if they pled guilty to the most significant of the charges. So there wasn't a formalized trial. We did have to go to court, but okay. It was a plea. So
I'm just curious, is the company around, or are they still?
They went out of business. They were a small mom and pop business from up in Severn Falls, I believe. And they did lose their business. I think they opened up again under another name. But I don't know. I didn't follow the company afterwards.
Can you guys, if you can, what time of the day again did the incidents happen?
Mine was like around 10 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday overtime shift.
And yours was?
Just after lunch on a weekday. I don't remember which day it was of the week, but it was during the week.
Do you guys remember, because Michael would have been leaving home, right? I'm assuming.
Yeah, he was living on his own at that point.
Oh, he was on his own, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you didn't see him in the morning of?
No.
But you saw him.
The very funny thing, though, is that he stopped by our house.
Oh, did he?
The night before. He had borrowed some, this is really corny, we both really like Arthurian myths kinds of books, and he had borrowed some books from me, a series of books a few months before.
Which book, sorry?
You know, King Arthur.
Yeah.
And all those. So they were called The Crystal Cave was the series.
There's nothing cheesy about that, no.
So he had borrowed them a few months before, and he actually came by the house in an ice storm freezing rain. So there was freezing rain the night before. These guys were all working on the roof as well. But that's another story. And to drop off these books. So I actually did. I got to see him the night before. And I always tell all of the kids especially, but the adults too at all of my presentations, that the last thing that my son and I said to each other was, I love you. As he walked out the door to go home, I consider myself fortunate to have had that. I nagged my kids when we were growing up, whenever they were fighting, you always say I love you to me before you leave. I don't care how mad you are. And it became a habit in our house. You know, you always, when you hang up the phone, yeah, when you hang up the phone or when you leave, you always say I love you. So
they could even be angry I love yous.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Still I don't love care. You. Yep. So I did, I saw him the night before, even though he wasn't living at home.
And then Mark?
Well, of course, working in industry, shift starts at 7 a.m., so you're leaving the house quite early. And if I was home in bed, he would come in the room before he left, and he'd kiss me and say, I love you. Like, he'd wake me up just before he'd leave. And then I'd roll over and grab his warm pillow and starfish, because, like, I finally had the whole bed to myself. But, yeah, so that was the last thing he said to me, was, I love you. So.
And I guess it's very similar for other people as well, too. Hopefully, it's very similar. If they're in that situation, they're fortunate enough to have that.
I hope so.
I guess you always treat every morning the same way. If you treat it that way, then you're better off, so to speak.
Yeah, treat every moment like it's your last, because it might be.
Do you guys, I mean, I know you guys look at the construction industry differently now. And I'm pretty sure you probably don't regret that these people chose that industry.
My daughter just started her electrical apprenticeship just over a year ago. So she's going to be an electrician. Good and she's been working. So she's been working construction sites for the last several years. She just started her apprenticeship, but she's been working towards it as an electrician. I don't know what they would call the unapprenticed unapprenticed electrical trainees. But she's been doing that for about 3 years, and she just started her apprenticeship. So I still have one in the construction industry.
Will you be nervous if...
Well, I'm nervous all the time, because this innocence you lose when you have something in your life that just shatters everything that you know that's safe. But you know what? Wherever my kiddo ends up working, he is going to be one of the safest people, because he already is. And he already tells his story to his classmates for the National Day of Mourning. Like, he's an advocate too. He's involved in and knows what I do with Threads of Life. So that's how you change the world, one voice at a time. So when he gets in the industry, he'll be out there, my mom says. And I hope so.
Am I wrong to say that the National Day of Mourning, which is April 28th, right, should be every month? Like, I don't know. Like, should we have a little bit more awareness than just one day a year? Or is that being...
But there is, like, I know, because I work in, it's not construction, but there's safety weeks, like national safety weeks that they recognize. And I know specifically the company that I work for has monthly safety videos, and... And in a lot of the companies that I've spoken for, like, they bring us in for those types of moments. So I think that there is a shift to really change the language and really connect with their workers, because I think companies are becoming more aware that, and this is just my opinion, they're becoming more aware that this is, like, it's such an invaluable tool to have these conversations. Because I know for me, when I'm speaking, I'm like, listen, I've been through a million of these safety videos. I've been an injured worker. I've sat in those chairs. I've rolled my eyes. I've avoided all of the things. And now I don't, because it is so much more real to me. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a shift. I think it's slow. But any start is better than none.
Of course, yeah. And I'm sure that you guys have probably helped a lot of people at Threads of Life for the volunteering process. And you guys have been a guiding light for them, for other strangers that you just met, But are there people that you recently met are actually kind of helping you guys again? Or like, because I mean, you're never going to need not help. Like, you're always going to want some help somewhere, but you guys are volunteering and giving up so much of yourselves to help other people. But are other people also contributing back to you guys? Are you guys seeing that from the other volunteers?
Oh, 100%.
It happens like, all the time,
you build,
right?
You build a family. Like, yeah. I mean, I would never have connected here if it wasn't for Threads of Life. And you become a family. We just finished our Central Family Forum. So basically once a year. There's three forums, like
East Coast,
Central,
and then out west in Alberta usually, yeah.
So, and what it does is it brings family members together, and there's workshops that you can do. There's just all kinds of opportunities to connect because it's so much of a community. And you share stories. And I was fortunate enough, especially for, what's the word I'm looking for? So seasoned family members. So this wasn't my first family forum this year. And they outreach and say, hey, we have some new families. Can I sit them at your table that first Friday night? And I'm like, excellent. Yeah, absolutely. Because it can be intimidating. I mean, you're coming in and meeting a whole new group of people. And you're is somewhere in your process of grieving or figuring it all out. And you're friends forever. You like the last day you're exchanging phone numbers. And I mean, right now I just nominated myself. I'm like the like captain of the self care club. And I send out a text like every few days. I'm because you don't when you're captaining the ship, especially
this
as moms.
Not me, you're
yeah. So and so like I send it every few days now. I send out it like, are you doing your self care? Are you doing your self care?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't and any. Because I'm also a family guide, so I did that training. And any training you go for, like, it is like instant recognition of family, like, everywhere you go. Like, I have never met a Threads of Life family and a member that I haven't felt at home with. And I think that's such an invaluable tool. It's such an it just fills your bucket. Like, especially, like, I think the family forum is the big place. I said it this weekend. It's the family forum weekend. This is where I go to fill my bucket. Because doing the speaking, you're giving of yourself. Doing the family guide stuff, you're giving of yourself and supporting. I'm also on the Steps for Life committee for London area. So we're just launching our sort of plan for what our walk is going to look like this year. But then you go to a family forum and you partake in the seminars and you get to sit with family members and then you have the conversation and it's like this reset for the year of how you're going to move forward and continue to do what you do.
And you're just with people who totally get it. They get what it's, you know, widows who have lost someone to a workplace fatality, like Melanie said, losing a family member or having a life-altering injury or an occupational illness that significantly impacts your life is different than any other type of situation.
Yeah.
You know, you're dealing with the Ministry of Labor, you're dealing with WSIB, you're dealing with just situations that other. And I'm not saying that it's worse or better or it's just very different. And so to be with people who get that, who get the stress, the strain, the all of the things that you go through during that whole process and forever after, it fills your bucket. And when you're new to a loss of any kind, loss of self, loss of, health, loss of a person, just to be in a room with people who you can go, these people get it, it's huge.
Is there one thing from both of you guys that you guys miss that was such a, why is he doing that? He always does that in the house. Like, he'll come in with dirty boots or he'll come in with this. Is there one thing that you guys missed that was such a, like a nice little, you're upsetting me kind of thing? I'm coming from a roofer. I'm not sure if there was what they would do, but now your daughter's going to be an electrician. So, what's the one thing that's coming to mind right now that they used to do all the time that would kind of just a little bit get under your skin, but now you really miss it?
He was a slob.
He what?
He was a slob.
He was a slob? But not at work.
No, he was actually... everything we heard, both from his past employers and the ones he worked for when he died, he was very meticulous, extremely meticulous. But
he
home,
was a slob at home?
His bedroom was a train wreck. The back of his vehicle, when we got it, was... it's like a bomb went off on it, in it. But I always say, his one at home, either when he lived at home or when he came home to, of course, borrow his dad's tools to fix his vehicle or do whatever, he was really bad for borrowing stuff or using stuff and never putting it back where it belonged.
It's a store.
And I always tell the, people that I, even after all this time, I would give anything to have one more chance to pick through his uneaten lunches to gather up his laundry. And I know that his dad would give anything to search for days for any one of his tools if it meant that Michael was still here and had been the one to lose it.
Anything come to mind?
Not so much things they did that annoyed me, because we were so early on in the... like, we were still really in the honeymoon phase, for sure. But there's so many little... because he was a perfectionist. Like, he... things had to be tidy, in its place, everything. And, like, I'm not a perfectionist, but I like my home to be homey. So we got towels for our wedding, and I just folded them neatly, like, totally neatly. And he was so upset. He's like, "Are you folding them like that on purpose?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he got, like, upset about how I was like, "Can you show me how you want them folded?" Like, and it wasn't that they were messy, but, like, he had such a particular way that things had to be organized and hung up. So it was like, I would purposely do things. Like, maybe I was the annoying one with the quirks because, like, I would do things to, like, see if he would notice. And, like, then we would, like, he would run around the house chasing me with this towel that I didn't fold properly. And I just, like, so, like, I miss those things, those little moments of, like, I can't annoy him. And I can't, like, for me too, I think the things I miss the most is, like, there's a significant moment where Liam learned to ride his bike the first time, and he's driving up and down my parents' driveway, and he's like, I'm doing it. And he's so excited. And it's like, you just want to phone Mark and be like, look at this amazing thing that your son is doing. And that's, like, the hardest thing for me now is, like, I am never going to be able to give Liam the things that Mark would have, because I don't know how to teach him that. So that's where...
but he gets Mark's tools.
He does.
I have all of my dad's tools.
Yeah, they're in a toolbox tied up. He knows exactly where they are. He's super excited.
He'll use them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he will.
He'll build plenty of things with them.
Probably drive his mom nuts with them.
If you're lucky.
If I'm lucky, I'll take it. I think, too, like, I've learned to...
I miss Michael driving me nuts.
Right? But I value those more. Like, I value those... small moments, like, just sit and hold on to those more, because you don't know the next time you're going to get one of those moments. So it's interesting in this journey, because I carry a lot of gratitude moving forward because of who I am now and the things that I'm doing. I wouldn't be this person. I hate how I got here. I will always hate how I got here. But if I can change someone else's story, then I'm going to do that.
Can you guys even imagine if there was no Threads of Life here? How men or women, family members, everybody would be coping? How would they be handling the situation?
I can't imagine where I would be if I hadn't found them.
It was interesting. I was in one of the sessions this weekend, or not this weekend, at our family forum, and it was I'm going to get what he does wrong, but he was a professional in psychiatry or something along that line. And he made this statement about how we live in a world that is illiterate when it comes to grief and grieving and death, because we don't hold space for any of that. And there's still a long way to go where we can learn what that language looks like and how we can provide support. But having Threads of Life makes a big difference in that journey, because it, the tools I learn here, I don't just use for fellow family members.
I use
it throughout everything that I do.
Have you guys met anybody that actually worked with your son, your husband, through Threads? Really?
My second presentation with Threads of Life, because my first presentation was an unexpected surprise. When I did my speakers bureau training, they said, "Don't worry, we ease you into it. You'll have a small group the first presentation you do. Mm-mm. It won't be too bad." And my first group was a construction company down in Vaughan. And I don't know, there was 100 and some people in the room. But the second group was the college in Barrie. And I spoke to their co-op class. And the teacher contacted me a couple of days later and said that one of the students that was in that class had worked with Michael. So, yeah, every once in a while, and he's been gone so long now that those things would be fewer and far between, but that was pretty impactful for a second presentation to have someone who knew Michael be there and get the message.
He was probably a little nervous about approaching you or speaking with you.
Well, he didn't come up to me. He spoke to his teacher and told her.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I have no idea how you would broker that conversation, come up to you, by the way. Like, that's difficult for a young tradesperson to think that way, right? But it's good that they're listening and they're there. And now they're going to share that story. And that's all we can really do is continue sharing these stories, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's why the work that Threads of Life does with all of their work is important. Supporting families is crucial because, like I said, I don't know where I would be if I hadn't found them. But the outreach that the Speakers Bureau, where we're going out there and we're changing the way people view safety, the way they really look at how they do their job. You know, I've heard so many times people say, I used to think PPE was such a waste of time. You know, depending on the job they're doing, roofers are really bad for it.
They are.
You know,
I could list you a bunch of other trades that are not that much better.
Yeah. So until they actually hear a story or something happens on a job site,
it has to happen for somebody to actually just be aware of it now. And the question is, how long does that awareness stick with that person? Does it disappear after a week, a month? I don't even think it makes it to a year.
Yeah, I don't know. But I do know that a big piece of what we do with Threads of Life is trying to get that message, that particular piece out there, so that maybe it will change the way they look at, you know, we all hear statistics. We see the news stories, we see it on the scrolls, on our news feeds, but those aren't real people. We don't know them. We don't have a connection with them. We're real people standing up there and talking and making the people that we loved real people for the audiences that we're speaking to, not just a news story and not just a number. And that's, I think, what makes a big difference.
Well, I'm glad that. I mean, the MOL has gotten so much better. The unfortunate thing is that they don't have enough inspectors to oversee. And we've had the gentleman on the show where they're talking it would take 150 years to actually inspect every job site with the current workforce of inspectors out there to make sure things are safe. But that's all levels of construction. And then there's a whole bunch of the cost of building versus the cost of life. And then you get those arguments going on, like what is the value of someone's life? And then we did discuss that on losing a finger or a limb, and like there's a number associated with it. And the loss of life, I don't even know how you put a number associated with it.
There isn't one.
There isn't one, right? But there is, according to certain corporations, that they see, well, that's what it's going to cost us, cost our business. And I'm like, that's not even a conversation you should be having. The economic side of construction, these are people, the workforce. I don't care if they're blue collar on the bottom of the soles of the feet, but they're the ones that are building these structures. They're the ones that are in those situations and then getting things done. There is value associated with every single one of them.
But I think that's where we come in with Threads of Life 100%. And speaking. Because, I mean, I know for me, but even before I started being a speaker at Threads of Life, my brother-in-law actually owns a construction company in London. And after this, it changed his perspective too. I mean, he was always a safe owner and employer. Like, it's always mattered to him because that's just who he is at the core of who he is. But he was, like, always at a loss of how do I get that message to my employees? Like, how do I... Because there's this like struggle to have that conversation and really listen. Because I think employees and employers sometimes are not speaking the same language or listening in the same way.
I don't think
way.
It's so much the struggle of having the conversation. I think it's the struggle of the worker listening. The conversation.
So he was one of the first people who was like, yes, like come in and speak to my workers. Like come in and share Mark with them. And like I cannot... Like, you can tell when you're in a room of people the impact you're having
and how
you've changed their life that day. And I don't think, like, there was a dry eye in the room because they just were, I mean, it's a difficult story to hear. It's a difficult story to tell. But at the end of the day, like, Threads of Life doesn't want to have a reason to exist. Like, it is an organization that's whole entire purpose is to someday not be needed. And so until that happens, we will go out and continue to speak wherever we get the opportunity to whoever is willing to listen, because it's going to change one person's life that day at minimum, if not more.
Sorry, I had a thought I was going to ask you and I totally forgot what it was.
I do that to people a lot.
No. I think that the reason that it connects really well, and I definitely would encourage anybody who's listening to the show to reach out to you guys, to reach out to Threads of Life, mm-hmm. to actually make those presentations. Mm-hmm. Because I think what happens is when you get 10, 20, 30 tradespeople sitting next to each other, when you guys are speaking and sharing real life situation, mm-hmm. they're sitting beside somebody that could be another story. They know that for a fact at that point. They told it could be them or it could be the person to the right or left of them, in front of them, behind them. It could be one of them.
Some of them are already part of the story because there is a lot of unreported injuries, unreported illnesses, and that conversation has to change too because I don't know if it's this statistic is still the same, but it was like 3 near misses is a lost time accident.
So really?
3 near misses, you're looking at a lost time accident. So if you aren't reporting that you had a near miss in a situation, you're looking at the potential for a lost time accident.
It's just inevitable that it's going to happen.
So if we're changing that language and having people have the conversation, then people are reporting more often things that are not working right are getting fixed, and the chances of an injury are getting lowered, and then the chances of a fatality are starting to get lowered as well.
According to this data here, it's up to almost 15% of unreported. That's a lot.
And then there's industries that don't fall into those statistics as well.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the reportable injuries to, I think it's the Canadian Association of Workers' Compensation Boards or something. So there's a lot of unreported. There's a lot of unreported because a company will say, oh, we'll pay you. Go home, take the day or two off so that we don't have to report it. So there's all of those. But there's industries and workers who aren't covered by workers' compensation boards who aren't in those reportable statistics as well.
So a lot has to change here. Yeah. And excuse my ignorance, but does the government support Threads of Life? Is there support coming from the government?
There's a lot of sponsors. We don't have personally where all of it comes from, but...
It's public knowledge. So they do issue a...
Annual report.
So it's not like it's a secret. I just don't pay attention to where all the funding comes from. So mm-hmm. Some of it is...
I'm just curious if any of it's coming from the
government. Workers' compensation does sponsor, but I don't... There's not annual, okay, you get this much money every year. I don't think it's that kind of funding,
yep.
But I don't know exactly how it works and how the sponsorship...
I don't do the numbers.
Yeah.
No.
Because I always say I'm not a numbers girl.
I can see the corporations getting involved because mm-hmm. it makes sense on their behalf, right? Because a healthier workforce is a better product that you're performing at, which makes a lot of sense. But I was just curious if the government's actually allocating funds and support for Threads of Life because it kind of makes sense, right? And then I was just going to say, well, that's one good thing this government's doing. I don't know. I mean, Susan's probably going to let me know if that's the mm-hmm. case, which I really hope that they are, because they should be, because this is important, that this is what should be going on instead of complaining about improper bathrooms on a job site. I think there's far more things to discuss about job sites, whether they're high rise or low rise or whatever. I think there's far more important things to deal with. And workers going home, I think, should be priority. Number one, top, bottom line.
Safe and healthy at the end
doesn't
of the
day. Doesn't matter how much
day.
It costs, right?
Yep.
Because the question is, as they've taught me, the safety inspectors, what is the cost to not do safety? You guys know that cost.
Too expensive.
Yeah, it's very, very expensive. Anything else you guys want to share before I get to the 12 questions? And I really appreciate you guys being here and opening it up. I know it's a difficult conversation. Anything we don't know yet?
I mean, the only thing I would say is that if you know someone in your community who's had an experience that's similar to ours, or you're an injured worker, there are resources out there. Please check out the Threads of Life website. It is such an invaluable space, and please take advantage of the opportunities that are there.
And volunteer. Reach out.
Yeah. Volunteer. Send come out
email,
for a Steps
call,
for Life walk.
Meet some people. Yeah.
And if you're a company who is having a health and safety, worker safety day, please reach out to Threads of Life as well, because we would love to come out and speak to your workers about the importance and impact of workplace safety and injury prevention. So,
and we have a wide range of speakers. So I'm almost sure we'd find someone who would fit your
industry.
Well, I think everybody would fit. I don't think it was... It's not a square peg in a round hole. I think it fits perfectly, right? Mm-hmm. One last question before I get to that is, how do I get a snazzy Threads of Life t-shirt?
Ask Susan.
Okay, I'm going to ask Susan, right? So I'm curious. I would like to wear one on future shows, right?
Well, and you can also come up for a Steps for Life walk and get one of our bright yellow t-shirts.
Bright yellow ones. They're really nice.
You should get a team.
I'm not afraid of color.
No, but you should put a team together and come
out
for one of our walks.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Encourage all the smaller mm-hmm. businesses or even bigger businesses to put a team together and do a walk with you guys. That's a great idea. Anybody listening, they can do it. I'm going to actually start talking to a few people. www.threadsoflife.ca, 705-707-9715. And also, well, I guess the email, would it just be info too as well? Or it could be someone's name?
I think info too will get directed to the right person.
Yeah, but if you get on the website, then you'll know it off the bat. And then also, I forgot to actually mention that you guys are all over social. You're all over LinkedIn, Instagram, Threads, and Facebook as well too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And if you're interested in the Steps for Life walk, there is a Steps for Life website as well, which is www.stepsforlife.ca.
Oh, I didn't even know that one, .ca. Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect. You guys ready for this?
Sort of.
Fire away.
What's your favorite construction word or phrase?
Safe.
Okay. Healthy.
What's your least favorite tool?
Anything with the word power in front of it.
Ladders.
What do you miss from your childhood?
Summer vacation.
Naps.
Oh, we do those as adults.
Not enough.
What construction sound do you guys love?
Diesel engine.
I can smell
sound.
It.
Sound. Yeah, I don't think it's a sound. It's a smell. Sawdust.
Both.
Yeah.
The smell of sawdust is awesome.
Favorite beverage?
Rockstar orange.
Coffee.
What turns you on and off in construction?
Seeing a worker with PPE on turns me on. Seeing a worker without PPE on definitely turns me off.
I agree.
You guys might have to veto. Favorite curse word? We've been keeping this one clean.
All right. Sorry, Shirley. It's fuck.
Favorite curse word. I don't really swear a lot, but probably the F word as well. Like, it's such a universal word.
Favorite vehicle. Any mode of transportation.
My pickup truck and my dirt bike.
My Subaru.
What profession other than your own would you guys like to attempt one day?
Professional wine tasting.
That's there a good you profession. Go. You rock.
That's a good profession. Do you have to spit them all out every time? Or
I don't know. Not the one I want to do.
I always say that if I had been smarter and gone back to post-secondary, I probably would have been an anthropologist or a sociologist.
What profession would you guys not like to do?
Plumber.
Mm-hmm. Is that where the influence is with the daughter on the electrician? That whole, okay.
Wouldn't want to do. I probably wouldn't want to be the guy who drives the honeysucker and cleans out all the septic
tanks. It's a tough one. I know. It's a needed one. It's a tough one.
Hey, I'm not criticizing. I don't think I have the stomach for it.
Intestinal fortitude. Yeah, right?
It's a tough one. Last question. If heaven exists, what would you guys like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Michael's been waiting a long time to see you.
Yeah, Mark's like over there.
Will you bring his boots?
Oh yeah, I brought them here today.
Did you? You want to show them?
I did. I bring them. They're right here.
Yeah, show. We could show everybody.
So
I usually bring Michael's.
I do these every year.
Safety belt too.
Look at that.
That's my kiddo, and every year since he's been able to stand, I put Mark's boots on him. And I make a poster for the National Day of Mourning, and I put it out there. So this year now is actually, this picture's been put on some of the advertising for Threads of Life. But
there you go.
Welcome to Mark's house boots.
Those are the house boots.
Those are the house boots, because the work boots got a bit destroyed.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys. I really appreciate taking the time to come here and talk and... I'll have a conversation with Susan and we'll probably even do some more support for you guys. I totally believe in what you guys are doing.
So thanks so much for having me.
Hopefully we cross paths on 5K or something like that. We'll cross paths. I'll be wearing a snazzy little yellow or green or whatever. As long as it says Threads of Life on it, then I'll be happy.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, because I firmly believe that without the ability to share our voices, we don't get the change we need. So every opportunity like this is invaluable.
Absolutely. And everybody's listening to podcasts now, so
this nobody's is listening to mass media, fantastic. News media. Everyone's got...
I was listening to you on my way down. Up.
Oh, from were
there.
You?
Yeah, or down from
there. I apologize for the profanity on some of the shows.
I was raised by truckers. Yeah. You don't have to worry about profanity.
Oh, I've never been shocked yet on this show, right? So actually, funny enough you say that, some of the women have some really colorful things.
I mean, I probably guilty. Have too. I've worked in factories most of my life, so I just don't do it as much now because I have a kiddo. I got to set an example for
no, him. You got to set an example. Then he'll be teaching you some.
Oh, he kind of has on. A little bit. He's 11 now, so.
Well, again, I want to thank Susan so much for connecting us and this whole Kevin Bacon thing. This is amazing. And thank you guys again to share the stories. And we missed them. And we have too many Marks and Michaels out there, right? Way too many of them out there. So I think you guys are making a huge change. So keep doing it.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. We're out of here.